Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 6, 2019. More revelations are out about the killers of Dong Samuel Luak.
It is a known fact to a good number of South Sudanese intellectuals that John Tov is an agent of security service of the government in Juba.
And nearly 20 people are killed in Bunga State over the weekend.
The total number of killed is 17, and we have 43 women missing and 61 children also missing. And the number of cattle up to now, it is confirmed that 6,000 cows and over 14,000 goats and sheep have been taken.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese who knew human rights lawyer Dong Samuel Luak very well are coming forward to speak about the things Dong told them before he was kidnapped in Nairobi in 2017. Luke Thompson Twam was the last person who met Dong in Nairobi. He says Dong disclosed to him how South Sudan's first Vice President Taban Dengai had threatened Dong during a telephone conversation. Thompson says he is ready to testify in a court of law against the killers of Dong and Agri Idri.
It is a known fact to a good number of South Sudanese intellectuals that John Tov is an agent of security service of the government in Juba.
But how about South Sudanese who will hit back at you and say you're a senior member of the SPLM-IO and so this is the opportunity to hit at the government?
There are differences between politically motivated statements and a statement that are backed by sufficient and substantive legal ground. I was a witness and privy to the kidnapping of Dong. I was the last person who was with him at Dream Bean's coffee shop. I cannot politicize his case because I would not be in position to gain anything. As I told you earlier, I facilitated the surrender of the audio recording to Amnesty International. You could cross-check with them what I'm telling you. They will tell you what has been said by looking your interview with him is correct.
And this audio recording was a telephone conversation. Who recorded the conversation?
It is Michael Kwajian. It was also authenticated by Kenyan Safaricom on the directive of the court.
Do you have that audio with you that you could share with us?
My phone was snatched some way back in 2017, around November. I was having it custody, but when I lost my phone, I don't have it now. I believe we can get it in the custody of Amnesty International.
How would you react to this reaction from a lot of South Sudanese who are saying that you, the SPLM-IO, actually sacrificed these two individuals for your individual gains because you all wanted to go to Juba and you signed an agreement and you forgot about them? When the report came out that they were killed, now you are talking like this.
Our call for justice to those who have been victimized by the regime has always been consistent. You will recall we have called for extension of pre-transitional period on security, because in the agreement it is provided for that all political detainees or all other persons that are in detention centers of the regime as a result of war should be released. And we thought Dong and Agri would have benefited from that agreement. Unfortunately, we came to learn that they are lynched by the regime in its security detention. We never forfeited their right or existence. We have been calling for justice to all.
How about the relationship between the current first vice president, Taban Dengai? How was his relationship with Dong and Agri Idri? You were all member of the SPLM-IO before July 2016 when Taban formed his own faction of the SPLM-IO. Would you want to talk about their relationship, the three individuals, Taban Dengai, Agri Idri, and Samuel Dong?
Dong himself, in November of 2016, in one of corners in Nairobi, entreated to me personally that he is being threatened by the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan and advising him to watch.
There are two vice presidents in South Sudan. Which vice president?
The current one who claimed to be legitimate one, Taban Dengai, the de facto first vice president.
So Dong told Taban you, Dengai. Yeah, so Samuel Dong told me.
Dong told me personally, because Dong had earlier on posted something on his Facebook page that he has been warned by Taban to be very, very, very careful. So in November, when I came from Kampala, I asked him, what is this you have written in your Facebook page? He said Taban called him and threatened him on his phone that he need to watch, because if he happens not to watch, he may end up in the jaws of this first vice president, Taban Dengai. I personally advise him to move away from Nairobi, because I know Taban. If Taban is not happy with you, or if he categorize you as someone who would cripple his political development, he can get rid of you.
And how about Taban's relationship with Agred Idri? I mean, you have been all within the SPLM-IO. Taban was the chief negotiator, and Agri was also in Addis Ababa. I remember I met Agri in Addis during the 2015 negotiations. How is the relationship between these two individuals?
You know, when Taban decided, let me cut the history short. When Taban decided to defect from IO and join the government in the pretext of salvaging the agreement after the events of July 2016, Agri was caught off guard. Heard to be in Crown Hotel with Taban for like 1 month. They went also together to the inauguration of Taban in J1. Until when he got the opportunity to sneak away from Juba on the cover of treatment. So when he came to Nairobi, Taban had to phone him and told him, you have to come back to Juba. So he told Taban, no, he's not going back to Juba. He don't see a reason as to why he would go back to Juba, because there is no peace in Juba. And then Taban hung up the phone on him. This is what Agri told me. They could not communicate any further when he made his intention clear to Taban, and their communication broke down from there.
That's Luke Thompson Twan, a senior member of the SPLM-IO. He spoke with me from Khartoum last week. This program requested to speak with first Vice President Taban Dengai last week, but he declined to comment on the allegations that he ordered the kidnapping of Dong and Idri from Nairobi in 2017 and their subsequent killing in Luri outside Juba town. Tomorrow we will air an interview with one of the lawyers who handled the case against the government of Kenya. Residents of Bor town say they are living in fear following clashes between members of the South Sudan National Security and police officers in Bor Market over the weekend. Police shot and killed a national security officer who was trying to rob a bank. Jonglei State Governor is urging residents to remain calm, as we hear from Manyang David Mayar from Bor.
Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer says the two security forces clashed Sunday night in front of the Kush Bank in Bor's main market.
Four soldiers from national security plus a group of police, they differed over the place to guard. And they fought, and unfortunately, one fired a bullet, and the other one fired. So one of them was wounded. The wounded, we were told by the doctors that it is severe, and we contacted the UNMISS. The UNMISS accepted. The referral is now undergoing treatment.
The fighting prompted shopkeepers in Bor Main Market to close over the weekend, but they opened their doors this morning. Speaking in Dinka, Governor Aguirre today called a rally in Bor, where he called on traders to open their shops and advised Bor citizens not to panic.
The person who shot the other is now in custody. There is no need to panic. The market must be opened and work normally. Security forces are in the market and everybody is free to do what they have been doing.
Police officials who refused to be recorded due to the sensitivity of the matter say on Saturday night, national security soldiers disarmed a police guard at Ivory Bank before proceeding to Kush Bank, just a few meters from the Ivory Bank. Fighting broke out after the guard at Kush Bank refused to lay down his weapon and opened fire on the invaders. One National Security soldier was wounded. Bor youth leader Wala Lier blames undisciplined police and national security officers for the chaos that ensued in the market. Speaking in Dinka, Alier is urging state officials to draw a clear line as to which forces are to be guiding the market during the nighttime hours.
Yesterday, people ran in the market, and as youth, if the national security is to protect the market, we need only national security in the market. And if it is the police, let it only be the police. But as I know it, it is the work of the police to guide the market. We don't need more chaos to happen in the market.
The closed shops meant consumers could not buy meat and other products for the start of Ramadan, but it was even worse for business owners. Speaking in Dinka, Busha Sheikh Yassin at Marol Market says he incurred big losses yesterday because of the fighting.
The meat I'm selling got rotten, and this is where I feed my family. The Ministry of Health came and asked us to pay the tax they always demand, and there is nowhere for us to pay it because we didn't make any sale yesterday, and we have not slaughtered cattle also today. So I'm asking the government not to bring their cattle here. Let them do it somewhere away from us.
Speaking in Dinka, I will attend. Another trader at Marol Market says he could not buy food for his family yesterday.
The market is where I get food for my family, and its closure has made my children to go without food. I am really annoyed as a citizen, and these are the things we hate. That is why some people choose to remain in refugee camps.
This is not the first time fighting broke out among security forces in Bor's Marol Market. In 2011, a group of police soldiers broke into shops in broad daylight to protest their low wages and chronic delays in receiving their payments. Governor Aguirre says those involved in last weekend's clashes will be disciplined according to the crime they committed. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Bumwa, where state authorities say 17 people are dead, dozens of others injured following intercommunal clashes that started on Thursday night and continued through Saturday. Bumwa State Deputy Governor has condemned the killings and says a thorough investigation is being carried out to track down the perpetrators. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor Town.
Bumwa State's Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement, Abraham Natabu, says the armed Murule youth attacked the Jew community in Jebel Bumwa area Thursday night to carry out cattle raids. Speaking by phone from Bumwa State, Natabu says the fighting left dozens of Murule and Jew youth dead, many others injured, and he says several people are still missing.
The total number of killed is 17, and we have 43 women missing and 61 children also missing. And the number of cattle up to now, it is confirmed that 6,000 cows and over 14,000 goats and sheep have been taken.
Bumwa State officials say the latest violence is a revenge attack following violence between the two communities last month. Officials say in that incident, 50 people were killed and 26 others were injured when armed Jew youth attacked the Murule community in Luwakudu. Bumwa State Deputy Governor John Joseph Abula says the government cannot, unquote, entertain such activities.
We need our communities to live in peace. Our motto as a government of a leadership of Bumwa State, we are for peace. We need peace to prevail in the state, and we are condemning that retaliation attack. Because what happening now is just something like recycling. Those people go, these youth from other side go and raid there, and this other one go tomorrow. This one is actually not good.
Natabu is pleading with the official in Juba to end the violence between the two communities and to encourage the residents of the rival communities to reconcile in order to prevent similar deadly clashes from occurring in the future.
What is unfolding in Bumwa State, it is actually a political genocide. It is actually a tribal cleansing. So let the national government intervene in this. So by giving pressure to those who are buying all this.
Agel Ring Machar, a spokesman for First Vice President Taban Dengai, says Guy is aware of the clashes in Burma and is working with the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the United Nations to restore peace in the area.
What the First Vice President has been trying to do over the last 1.5 years is try and look for a more holistic approach to why these things are happening, so that they are addressed from the root cause, so they don't take themselves, so that they don't reoccur as they normally do.
In 2017, the first vice president toured the 5 states kept out of Jonglei State by President Salva Kiir and warned governors, county commissioners, and Fayam chiefs that unless they prevent their people from carrying out cattle raids and abducting children, the national government will intervene and hold government officials accountable. Abula says Burma State Governor David Yau Yau has formed a committee to investigate the latest violence between Murle and Jie communities and will ensure the instigators face justice. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng reporting from Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese are skeptical about the extended pre-transitional period. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is saving money easy or hard for you?
Saving money has always been an easiest thing for me. I think it's just in blood. I actually have friends who always, they always tell me I'm a much saver than a spender.
Saving money is not easy. Reason? In this world, we have a lot of challenges whereby economic, sometimes it is high and down.
It is not easy to save money these days because I don't have a stable job, so it's very hard for me.
I don't have a job yet. I don't know if it will be hard or easy for me, but I have been looking for a job for 2 years. If I get a job, I make sure it's saved.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Yeyi Town and civil society activists worry about the problems of the extending the transitional period. The parties agreed last week to extend it by another 6 months. Residents fear that violence and human rights violations will continue over the next 6 months. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yeyi Town.
Yeyi Town resident Otim Begin says delaying the formation of the government until November 2019 shows the parties are not committed to implementing the revitalized peace agreement. Begin says South Sudan's leaders will take practical steps to implement security arrangements which they failed to implement in the past 8 months.
Extension means that we are going to suffer again for another 6 months. What is needed, for example, containing the forces, so that after the 6 months, we need to see that there's a one army with the one army chief of staff to command all the forces. I don't want to see that the roads are blocked. People should be left to move freely. Civilians need to move freely to their villages. Production in terms of agriculture should continue normal. Rule of law should be observed.
Dawa Susan, a resident of Yeyi Town's Lomuko neighborhood, says she fears the delay could lead to violations of the provisions, especially human rights violations committed by both government and rebel soldiers.
We are really suffering very much. In the next 6 months, we don't want again. This is of raping and stopping people on the way, killing. We don't want because we have lost enough. Let the leaders come together at least within these 6 months for them to agree on one thing, to put all the weapons down for us to be in a good move. We forget the war. We contribute towards the development of our country.
Joel Barber, a resident of Yeyi's Haigwafa area, says extending the pre-transitional period by 6 months was a bad idea.
The more the months are extended, the more killing will occur in the parts of South Sudan. So I'm appealing to the government and opposition that they should come together so that this peace is addressed, so that people in every part of the country lives in harmony. In actual sense, is the government and the opposition part to sit down so that they look upon the issues of the states.
Paul Orhisa, program manager at the Institute for Promotion of Civil Society in Yeatown, is urging the parties to jointly amend the constitution before November to ensure that the new government is formed according to the law.
We need to see the constitution to project it very clear that each and every person is included in the constitution. It does not matter, provided the constitution has spoken and it is really implemented, but not at the expense of extension, but many people face the consequences of the extension of the period.
Ma George is the executive director of a civil society group, Community Empowerment for Rehabilitation and Development. He welcomes the extension of the pre-transitional period, but urges parties to the agreement to fully recommit to implementing the peace accord.
This extension, to me, is a call for renewal of commitment from the party to be able to recommit to fully implement the provisions of the agreement that they signed. At the same time, we're also urging that efforts should be put for mobilization of both national resources, but also international resources, and that must go hand in hand with the support from the parties, and really ensure that they don't take the next 6 months for granted.
Ma says it is also important for the parties to lobby the international community to support the implementation of the peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yeatown.
From here, we move to Sudan, where Sudan's ruling Transitional Military Council has said it will publish its own suggested constitutional draft after disagreeing with some points in the opposition's version. A revised constitution is part of a negotiated effort to form a joint military-civilian council before elections. But as Naba Mohyadin reports from Khartoum, protesters remain skeptical.
Sudan's Transitional Military Council is to publish its own draft constitution on Monday after disagreeing with parts of one proposed by Alliance of Activists and Opposition Groups. The spokesman for the TMC, Shamsuddin Kabashi, at a news conference Sunday, said while there was some dispute, there was still room for negotiation. For us, it's a good draft. It has many points. We agree on it. With them, protesters, there are a lot of points of disagreements, and that can be handled with negotiations between us and them. The Declaration of Freedom and Change Forces Alliance sent a draft on Thursday to the military. Sudan's protesters have been camped out at the defense ministry since April 6, demanding a return to civilian rule after 3 decades under President Omar al-Bashir. The military ousted Bashir on April 11 and declared a transitional military council was in control for up to 2 years before elections. But protesters like Mutaz Wali are skeptical that the TMC is willing to hand over power. He says that the TMC doesn't understand that its role is to deliver power. Instead, it's starting to act like a real transitional government, says Wali. The TMC is speaking about enacting laws while the constitution is disabled, he says. The military council agreed with opposition groups last month to form a joint council to lead a 2-year transition period to elections. But the two sides disagree about which should have a majority on the council, the military or civilians. Sudan's demonstrations erupted in December over the high price of bread and fuel, then quickly morphed into calls for Bashir to step down. The military says it put Bashir in federal prison and he will face justice at home, not at the International Criminal Court, where he is wanted for alleged war crimes in Sudan's Darfur region. Sudan's prosecutor general said Bashir was questioned on Sunday over suspected money laundering and financing terrorism after large sums of foreign currency were found in suitcases in his home. Naba Mohyadin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Still in Khartoum, Sudanese protesters continue to hold large rallies in the city, demanding a transitional civilian rule. But as Ramadan starts today, protesters face a new challenge. Muslim fast from dawn to sunset every day. Ahmed Kodouda, who just returned from Khartoum, says it is unclear if the fast will impact on the protesters' momentum. He says organizers and food companies have planned ways to ease the experience for the protesters.
Ramadan is going to be a very big test to the protest movement and the opposition groups. Khartoum is a very hot city, and during the month of Ramadan, most people seek shelter inside air-conditioned facilities. What we're seeing is a mobilization now to erect tents that are air-conditioned to allow the protesters to sit in during the day. And a lot of the private sector, including food companies, are actually preparing food stocks and water for the month of Ramadan, all to help continue to sit in. It's quite clear that protesters are preparing for group iftars, or the breaking of the fast, and sahurs, or the pre-fast meals, in droves. And it's likely that the sit-in will continue in some form, but we shall see if it will continue in these numbers.
So, Ahmed, what did you see when you were in Sudan?
I saw a complete transformation of Khartoum. The capital city was taken over by tens, possibly hundreds of thousands of protesters at a sit-in in downtown Khartoum near the military headquarters. This area was basically a liberated area from government control. We see that all peoples who've been oppressed, marginalized, and victimized by this regime, occupying this space, creating speakers' corners, opening up dialogue, and basically trying to heal themselves, if you will, by airing out their grievances that have happened over the past 30 years.
What's next for Sudan?
I think it's clear that the cards are dealt in the side of the Transitional Military Council, but the opposition groups and civil society, as well as the protesters on the ground, have shown a remarkable resilience and determination in order to continue a transition towards civilian rule and hopefully try to establish a process of democratization. I think any effort by regional powers to re-entrench authoritarianism will be complicated by the resilient change actors in Sudan who have learned lessons both from Sudan's history as well as from the region. They've made it clear that they will do absolutely everything to ensure that any transition is managed by civilians and that a democratization process takes root in the country.
That was Sudanese diaspora member Ahmed Kodoida speaking to Ayin Deng Bior from Washington. That brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Donobi by Kwebna Kwebna.
My way, I don't call your door. Oh, yeah. Into some of my no, that's a Sasha Shamani Matia, Mammy Show. So be though, I don't need me. If you my way, I don't call your door. Oh, yeah. Into some of my no, that's a Sasha.
We have been listening to Kwebna Kwebna with the song Donobi. John Tanza in Washington, we are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Serve it up.
Let's see my way, I don't call.